Hello, everybody, and welcome into episode number 399 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
Okay, so today we are going to talk about things that are not boats, which I'm still mad about last week that I didn't get submarine, because when you think about it, U-boats, the answer like should have been obvious in terms of what I know about submarines. I'm still angry about it, but by the end of this episode, I'll get over it because there will be something else that I will be angry at.
Angry about, yeah.
So fun fact about this, I went to my dad, the chief, in between these episodes, checked with him, asked him the same question. He kind of thought about it for a second, went, it's submarines. And I went,
Papakazi.
I think one of the important things we should bring up here before we get started, this is episode 399. Mm-hmm. We've done 399 episodes of this podcast. Don't go back and listen to episode one, mainly because I don't think we have it uploaded anywhere, which is probably a good thing.
We innovated the format a long time ago, so it would just be 20 minutes and not an hour. And for those of you that listened before, you are welcome again. Yeah, I'm just saying that a lot lately. You're welcome. You're welcome. You know, you should be thanking. No, I am not a jerk, mostly, sometimes, if you deserve it. Speaking of jerks, Michael, I was going to let you go first, but you went first last week, so I'm actually going to go first.
I have a quick programming question, though.
Go on.
Does, with next week being episode 400...
Yes.
Are we doing our drunk podcast?
Yes.
All right. Drunk podcast coming next week.
Drunk podcast from home. So yes, none of us have to worry about, none of us have to worry about coming into the office. None of us have to worry about making our way home. Michael, in the past, you have had issues getting from the office back home after the drunk cast. That should not be a problem this time.
I was just fine. It was the people traveling with me that
Yeah, you'll be just fine. You just have to make it from your wherever you're recording to the bedroom, which for me is like 15 steps. So do not fear, my friends. But I want to get right into our interesting facts. As everyone that has listened knows, we say the questions, guess along with the answers, and you will do better than me. So congratulations for already being a winner. Okay, so I'm going to kick us off here. This comes from Business Financing and another website called visualcapitalist.com. So take that for what you will. And I wanted to know about oldest companies, right? I've been looking into business a lot. We got some cool things in the works lately, and I'm studying businesses. And I wanted to know what was one of the oldest corporations in the world. I have the answer to that question, according to this particular source. And I'm not talking like somebody, you know, going down the street and buying some barley. This is like an actual corporation that still exists to this day. Like, this is the name of the company back then, still exists now. So guys, what's the name of that company?
Have you asked this before?
No, I'm kidding. There's no way that you'd pull the name of the company out of your hat. I actually want to know, what industry is it?
Okay. So you definitely haven't asked this before.
I have not.
Because that was... It's the East India Trading Company.
Yeah, that was my immediate reaction.
Yeah.
It's older than that. The East India Trading Company isn't even on this list. Not even close.
Got it. Okay. So the oldest company in the world, what does it do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I can tell you that it was independently family operated until about 2006, when it was actually sold to a bigger corporation, but it still operates basically independently. But it went from 578... to 2006, entirely independent.
578,
yes.
God, can you imagine like the plaque that you have up on that wall at that company? Like, independently owned and operated since 568. Or 578?
578.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so first part of this is, where is it? What country would have the oldest company?
I mean, thinking about 578, my immediate thought is something like either China or the Middle East.
So that was the first thing that came to my mind, was China. Also potentially Greece, but I feel like that would be older.
India, maybe?
India, maybe.
I don't know much about
Japan. Early.
Japan, maybe.
Japan is correct.
Ooh, okay.
So I'll stop there. So Japan is correct. I can also tell you that China is 10th on this list of, or China has the 10th oldest company on this particular list.
Okay.
That's still in operation. And that one was from 1153, still in operation today.
Okay. Well, given what we do for a living, I'm going to have to say it made booze. That seems like a good fit, right? It's a brewery. It's a brewery. It's got to be a brewery. That just makes the most sense.
Okay. Brewery, sure.
So I just watched, this is in no way related to anything else, but I recently watched The Hateful Eight, which is Quentin Tarantino's eighth movie.
Sure.
And the whole thing takes place in a haberdashery.
Ooh, you think they made hats?
Well, see, that's what I thought a haberdashery was, but this was
it's
like
a men's clothier.
Yeah, but yeah. The haberdashery in this case was like this lodge where they all basically stayed to wait out a blizzard.
That's a good guess, like a hotel.
Yeah, so my thought is some sort of traveler's hotel, but only because I can't get the word haberdashery out of my head. So my immediate thought was, quite frankly, a little bit closer to what you were just saying, Nick, was some sort of clothier.
Okay.
So I'm going to say some sort of, can I just be broad and say manufacturing?
I guess, sure.
Manufacturing then. I'm going manufacturing.
Okay, well, you both are wrong. Sorry to tell you. If you think of things that existed in the past that still exist today, what do you think of? I mean, obviously booze, that's a good guess.
Yeah, the pyramids.
The pyramids. What are the pyramids? They're buildings.
They're tombs. They're buildings, yes.
Yeah, okay. So this is a construction company.
Oh, that makes sense,
so they,
I guess.
So you're saying they manufacture buildings?
No, there's the specific brand here, the manufacturing production. They would talk more of like flour mills, which was a Danish company from 1135, Munk Mole from 1135, manufacturing production for a flour mill. But Congo Gummy Co. Limited is a Japanese country construction. Company. They 578 started making Buddhist temples, made temples throughout their time, made castles. Independently owned and operated until 2006, but still operational today. The next one on the list is from Austria and is the oldest restaurant in the world. And that's from 803 St. Peter Stift's Galerium in Austria. And then of course there's Germany has a winery from the late 800s. France had a few mints, as did England. And of course there's an Irish bar on the list too that opened in the year 900. That's still going
always an Irish bar
on a list. But yeah, that's always one of those, like, timing wise, one of the amazing things where you sit there, you look at it, you're like, Oxford University is older than the Aztec Empire, or Betty White is older than sliced bread, or, you know, all that kind of stuff.
We love those ones. And then I want to point out my favorite name here. So Mao Ching's Bucket Chicken House from 1153, Chinese service restaurant. And that was still in business today. So wanted to just point that one out because it said Bucket Chicken House. And I appreciated that. It's not
what year
bucket,
was it?
1153.
So you could get a bucket of chicken for dinner for the family. You could get a family. You could get the Colonel's bucket, family bucket in 1153.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know if they're literal buckets, but I want to know now. So there you go. Who's got their segue from the oldest corporation in business in the world to your interesting fact, my friends?
I think I got something.
Let's hear it, Michael. It cannot be worse than mine last week. So.
It really can't, so I can try. one thing that I'm sure since 578, they've had to adapt with the changing world is how that company advertises. So, you know, many, many different companies try advertising, obviously, to increase business.
Sure.
And there is a company out there that you may know their advertisement, but may not know that it's an advertisement.
Interesting. Okay.
Are you familiar with a series of paintings called Dogs Playing Poker?
Yes. Who isn't familiar with the greatest series of painting ever created?
They are actually advertisements.
For dogs or poker?
Well, that's the question. What are they advertising?
Cigars.
That's a great.
Moving right along.
All right. All right.
Thank you, Lindsay. Moving along. Yeah, that's right.
This has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Nick.
I was so happy. They were missioned by Brown and Bigelow, based in St. Paul, Minnesota, to advertise cigars.
Oh, God, Lindsay's going to fall out of her chair. I've never seen her this happy. And I was at her wedding.
Oh, public events. So here's a follow-up question. How many are in the series? In the original...
How many cigars or dogs?
How many paintings are there in the original series?
Based on my knowledge of this, which is nothing but the correct answer to your question. So, I don't know. I'm going to say 10 in the series.
No, a series is 7. If it gets to 10, you're getting into a whole different classification of things.
Well, it would be 18, so...
Oh, they made 18 dogs playing poker paintings.
Yeah, they did. They did different things. So there's one reading the mail. There's obviously ones playing poker. There's a bunch of them playing poker.
These aren't dogs doing things painting. These are cigar advertisements. There's a difference because, you know, like dogs are going to smoke cigars and cats are going to smoke cigarettes. You know that.
Cats are going to smoke cigarettes, like on the end of one of those, like Breakfast at Tiffany's on. Kind of. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
We see you. We see
you,
cats.
So of the series, 8 of them are actually them playing poker. And then there's a couple different activities that they're all doing. So here's one testifying in court, ballroom dancing.
Did it work? Did it increase cigar sales?
I don't know. I'd imagine it does because the original painting was in 1894.
Wow.
Okay.
So at the very least, it's one of those, there are commercials that everybody knows that, like, you can think of the commercial and almost recite it, but have no idea what they're trying to advertise.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I'd imagine it's like that. Where after a certain point, people are like, oh, it's the dogs playing poker, but don't remember that.
Right. Like, I can sing the whole Mentos jingle. No idea what it's advertising.
Or like, Don't Mess with Texas. It came from an anti-littering campaign.
Right. Perfect example, Lindsay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael. Okay. Well, I am so sorry. I shat on you earlier. I take it all back. I'm in a great mood now. This is excellent. Thank you for blessing us with your presence here today, Michael. We appreciate it. And I'm thankful for you.
I'm thankful for you guys too.
All right. So,
Nick, go ahead.
Something you do. Yes. So when you're celebrating, when you are successful, when you've won, right. Mm, you light
like
up your cigar.
Just a few moments ago.
Right. Yeah. Lindsay's sitting there smoking her cigar. It's her celebratory cigar, right? Mm-hmm. That's something that you do when you win, right? And timing wise, recently, we have just recently gone through an election here in the United States, and I'm not going to get into any election or politics talk. But one of the things that I did think was very interesting, and I started looking at, was voter turnout in historical U.S. elections. Can you tell me which election? You know what? That's going to be too hard. We'll get into that in a minute. What is the highest percentage of voter turnout in a U.S. election? And as a caveat, we are recording this prior to the 2020 election, so.
Nick, I was going to tell you before we recorded to not do anything election-based because this could very much change. And I was like, no, he's not going to be that dumb to do that. and I stand corrected. So
it's not going to change.
Let's go down this journey, shall we? Well, if you go back to, pre-1920 and pre-13, 14, 15th Amendment, there was a much lower percentage of people in the country that were eligible to vote. So I would assume it's pretty early on in the country because, you know, white dudes had their time. So let's think, Michael, what would be the percentage?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the train of thought I was thinking too, was where the eligible voting populace was a lot lower. I'm going to go with, quite frankly, I'm going to go with election number one. I'm going to say the first election of George Washington. I'm going to say you have that kind of one very small eligible electorate in addition to it's this brand new thing. So the novelty of being able to vote tied to the small population that can vote.
So further caveat, there is no data for any elections between 1789 and 1824. So it would be after, it would be the 1828 forward.
So we can just assume I'm right and move on.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so starting in 1824.
Yeah, correct. So wait, Nick, are you asking us for the year or are you asking for the percentage?
The percentage. What is the percentage of of eligible voter turnout?
Okay. So historically speaking, usually it's like what, 50%, right? Like 55, 54% is kind of like the average.
Yeah, we'll say between 50 and 60.
That is somewhere between, right around 50% is about average. As a sort of placeholder, the 2012 election, so we'll just use that as a baseline, 54.9% voter turnout.
I remember for one of my college admission essays, I had to write about whether or not I agreed with Australia's everyone has to vote by law thing. And I like very distinctly remember that essay because I was in no way prepared for to write it. And it was, I don't know what I wrote in the half an hour in the little tiny blue book, but I remember so distinctly reading that and being like, what in the heck? okay, so Michael, so we know that we agree that it's going to be over 60%. So the question is, how much higher than that? So we got 60 to 100. I don't think there's ever been 100% voter turnout ever.
I would
be shocked if it was in the 90s. So I'm going to go with 75%. 3 out of 4 people voted. It was pretty high. And I'm trying to think of like what election that would be, you know?
Right. I think it's lower.
Just not counting the Confederate States in 1864. Like that election was, sorry guys.
I think it's lower.
Okay.
Just kind of, I don't know. I'm going to say 65%. I'm going to say somewhere between 65 and 70. So I'll say like 67. Yeah.
Okay. 67%. Sounds good.
So I'll say 2 out of 3.
2 out of 3. So, okay. So 67% and 75%.
Yeah, no, I'm way high.
Okay. So you are both low, actually.
Low? Really? I'm shocked by that.
Yeah. There have been 9 U.S. elections, presidential elections, that have had higher than a 75% turnout. 9 of
really?
Them.
Really?
Yeah. There have been, I'm not going to count all the way down the list, but it's 18 or 19 of them have been over 65%. Now, most of those were a while ago, but the absolute, your number one seed, 81.8% of the eligible voters turned out for the 1876 election.
Oh.
Now, I know everybody knows what it is. The big piece of this was post Civil War, post Johnson and Grant. This was the election between Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden.
Battle of the classic. Titans.
Yeah, exactly. And the big thing was that this was sort of the first, not first, but it was one of the big like recombining everybody all working together thing. And both candidates were universally hated by all parties. So as a result, the turnout was incredibly high trying to vote for one of these candidates that nobody liked.
I thought it would have something to do with the like centennial that like everybody was just like high on America.
Right. This is also, by the way, one of the most, not one of the most, it's the most disputed election in history, and it was the electoral vote ended up being 185 to 184, so it was super ridiculously close. On the other end of the spectrum, which I thought was interesting, was the election of 1924, which had a 48.9% turnout, and that was a three-way race between Calvin Coolidge, John Davis, and Robert Follett, who was from the Farmer Labor Party. But yeah, it was less than 50% of the vote at that point.
Well, in that, but in that instance, there were a lot of people at that time that were just getting used to the ability to vote, right? Like that was, you know.
Yeah, 1924, yeah.
Like Ninth Amendment passed just a few years before. This is one of the first presidential elections women could vote at. They probably were like, oh yeah, I can do that now. Yeah, you know.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, hold up, this is a new thing for me. But that's very exciting, cool. Well, yeah. So what was the final percentage again?
It was 81.8% of the vote in 1876.
Cool. I don't have anything to say beside great job. You are excellent at facts. And that will be our secret phrase. Excellent at facts.
All right.
Michael, what's that phrase?
It's excellent at facts.
Oh, cool. Thank you. That you're talking about me. Appreciate you. Appreciate ya.
I did try to throw on that radio voice for it.
You're perfect, Michael. Okay, and this has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
We don't know either.
Bye.